Welcome to the Hillingdon Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust podcast.
Welcome to the latest podcast from Hillingdon Hospitals. I'm Lucy Wills, and today we're continuing the conversation about the menopause. With World Menopause Awareness Month in October, and in particular World Menopause Day on October the 18th, we are today talking about the symptoms of the menopause and how this can affect women in work, and importantly, how our workplace can support this. I'm here today with Neil Watson, consultant gynaecologist, who's an expert in the menopause, and Elaine Hodson, wellbeing lead in the Trust, who can advise us on the support we provide for women at this time. Hi, Neil. Can you talk us through what symptoms a woman might experience before and during the menopause?
Thank you. So one of the issues in relation to the menopause is it's incredibly variable, and different women will have very, very different presentations. The most common, or the classic, is called the hot flush. So women will often get hot flushes, and they vary considerably to the degree. They can be exacerbated by alcohol and getting hot and things from that point of view. And they can sometimes be incredibly debilitating and embarrassing for women. Being brought on by alcohol, and they stop drinking, not having alcohol and things, because it causes all sorts of issues in that context. And that's really the classic, and that's what everyone seems to sort of pool and concentrate on. But in fact, the hot flush is probably one of the least important symptoms. The menopause, often in the transition coming up to the menopause. So the menopause is defined as the last menstrual period. However, many women will get significant symptoms for 2, 3, 4, and even 5 years leading up to that last period.
The perimenopause,
but there isn't a specific definition for perimenopause, other than it's just the time before the menopause, but how far it goes back has never been specifically elucidated. But so the other problem in relationship to the common things in the perimenopause is often mood swings, depression, lack of concentration, the ability, just sort of irritable, snappy,
and
really emotional in that. And that often occurs prior to the periods each month. Women will often have problems with, those sorts of symptoms tend to arise for a few years prior to the menopause, and sometimes they improve a little bit after the menopause, and it's largely due to fluctuations in the hormones and things from that point of view. Then when the transition of the menopause occurs, then there are the long-term consequences of the menopause, which are the effects on the cardiovascular system, the effects on the bones and osteoporosis, and the effects on the lower urinary tract, and causing urological symptoms, and can cause lead to prolapse and vaginal atrophy and soreness and occasional vaginal bleeding and things from that point of view.
So those are the symptoms going on, both in the brain and in the body.
So those are the sort of main main categories as we define them, and they vary tremendously. There is a vogue or a feeling that most women up until recently think the menopause is hot flushes, and that's all that it is. I think that's not the case at all, and I think all women will suffer from menopausal symptoms to some degree. Some may not recognize them as being menopausal symptoms, so if they don't have the hot flushes to pinpoint the menopause, as they call it, then they will often say, well, I'm fine, I never had really any menopausal symptoms. But if I come to treat them, if they've got osteoporosis and I treat them with hormones at that time, they'll often turn around to me and say, oh my goodness, all those symptoms that I put down to old age, such as aches and pains in the joints, just less energy, less drive, and just feeling tired all the time, have all disappeared. And I thought they were old age, when in fact they were actually an element of not having estrogen within the system to benefit the bones, the joints. So osteoporosis is one aspect of the menopause. But patients will often complain a lot about pains in their joints, finding it really difficult to get up in the mornings, aching all over. And the addition of estrogen and a small amount of testosterone will often completely resolve a lot of those symptoms. So I fundamentally believe that all women will have some degree of symptoms, and there aren't the so-called lucky ones that escape the menopause without having symptoms. They may not attribute the symptoms yeah, they do have to the menopause, but they don't realise it from that point of view.
So is it possible to help minimise symptoms,
the replacement with hormones is the way to go. And you know, I fundamentally believe the menopause is a failure of an organ, the ovary, and that any other organ that fails, whether it's your thyroid or your adrenal glands or your pancreas or whatever, doctors would automatically replace them without any question whatsoever. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to the menopause, most people will say, oh no, it's the menopause, it's a natural phenomena, therefore we shouldn't replace it and forget all about it. And I fundamentally disagree with that. Firstly, it's not natural. So it's not natural for most of us to be alive today. So women in their 50s would have died long before they got to their 50s. And it's only in the last 70 or 80 years with medicine, vaccines, measles vaccines, antibiotics, everything, or intervention in childbirth, etc., that actually women never lived to 50. So this idea it's natural is complete and utter baloney, and it seems to be just an excuse not to look after those women in their 50s and say, well, it's natural, so therefore you don't need to have anything done about it. So one of the aspects in relationship to where we cardiovascular disease, the advantage of women are protected against cardiovascular disease by having estrogen in their system. It prevents atheroma being laid down in the arteries, and therefore the incidence of cardiovascular disease in women is significantly lower than it is in men. However, after the menopause, women will get an acceleration in cardiovascular disease, such that by the age of 75, they've reached the same rate of cardiac disease as men have. If they take estrogen, that will prevent that from happening, because estrogen prevents atheroma being laid down in the arteries, which is the mechanism of cardiovascular disease. So by taking estrogen, it stops atheroma being laid down in the arteries. One of the confusions was that the so-called WHI study, which caused quite a lot of controversy about breast cancer, was looking at treating older women with HRT, and they gave them an oral HRT and in women who were 65 or over, and they saw an increase of heart attacks in those women, which to me was totally predictable, because they gave an oral therapy which thickens the blood into women who'd already had atheroma laid down in their arteries because they were 65 and hadn't had estrogen for 15 years. So thin arteries, thickened blood, what's going to happen? It's not going to work so well, and they got an increased heart attack. Exactly. However, if you take the hormones through the skin, it doesn't affect the blood in any shape or form and has a very different effect, and therefore doesn't increase the risk of cardiovascular disease if you have it through the skin rather than as oral HRT.
And what age and what stage compared to the menopause do you think women should be taking HRT?
I think there's a very strong argument that women should be on HRT for the rest of their lives. You know, you don't stop thyroxine, or you don't stop insulin, or you don't stop adrenal hormones just because someone reaches a certain age. And likewise with the menopause, it seems illogical to me to stop a treatment. And most women, once they're on it, they feel so much better, they don't want to come off it, because they're managing to function so much better than they were prior to going on the HRT. So I don't see any indication for patients to come off hormone replacement therapy.
Are there any people that shouldn't take HRT?
The only group where there are issues are in those women who've had breast cancer. And women who've had breast cancer, there is some types of breast cancer can be stimulated by estrogen. That's why they give them, one of the treatments for breast cancers is to have anti-estrogens, as they call it, called tamoxifen and letrozole and one or two other tablets. And if positive breast cancer, then there's probably an indication not to go on HRT. However, that is an area of quite a lot of controversy. And in some patients who are still really, really suffering and have tried one or two alternative therapies, I do occasionally treat those patients because they really do, their life is not worth living. And they'll often say, well, actually, you know, the quality of life is more important to me than the quantity. And if it means that I die a year earlier, then as long as I've got quality between then and then. But it's a very difficult one, and it's not common practice at all to treat that. So that's one. So any cancer treatment, cancers that are estrogen dependent, which is essentially breast cancer, but there are women with a BRCA gene cancers who in fact estrogen is beneficial, and women taking estrogen therapy actually have a lower incidence of recurrence compared to people not taking it. So it varies in
lots of elements to look at. Can I ask you about having a hysterectomy? Will having a hysterectomy cause the menopause?
Now, that's a very interesting discussion and one that has never really been answered. If you have a hysterectomy and your ovaries removed, you will go immediately through the menopause, and that's called a surgical menopause, etc. In those women who have a hysterectomy where their ovaries are left behind, them conserved, there is a big debate about it. Some studies had suggested, a chap called Nick Siddle published many years ago a study suggesting that women who had a hysterectomy had an earlier menopause than women not having had a hysterectomy. Now, the difficulty with that is, was the reason the women were having a hysterectomy because they were perimenopausal and about to go through a menopause, and that's why they were having all the bleeding problems and the bleeding problems which led to the hysterectomy in the first place, or was it the actual hysterectomy that caused them to go through a premature menopause? And that has never really been properly answered. The problem is the ovary receives its blood supply both from the womb, that which you remove at the time of hysterectomy, but also has another blood supply that comes separately to the ovary. And it varies tremendously as to how much blood comes from each source. So in some women, you know, 70% of it can come from the uterus and only 30% from the normal ovarian arteries, and others it will be 70% from the normal ovarian arteries and only 25 or 30% from the womb, and it varies significantly. There have been some very elaborate Zeon studies looking at that many years ago, but it is controversial and no one really knows the true answer to it. But the general take-home message is it may bring through a menopause slightly earlier if you've had a hysterectomy with the ovaries conserved.
So in terms of timing, when should a woman think about going to see their doctor if they want to get advice about the menopause or perimenopause? Well,
I think if they're beginning to get symptomatic, they're beginning to find that they can't concentrate as well, they're becoming very, you know, they've noticed big mood changes. Often it's a case of the family telling them and saying, you know, mum, you've suddenly become really unreasonable. You're shouting at us, you never used to, or husband's noticing it. And it's amazing the number of husbands that have written to me thanking me for getting their wife back and things like that, which women do suffer. The problem is when they're still having periods, the GPs will often fob them off and say, well, no, it's not the menopause, therefore you don't need any treatment, and only when you stop your periods will we treat you. And it's a terrible shame, because some of these women really, really, really do suffer tremendously and can get treatment which is very, very effective. So, yes.
And I'll just ask Elaine a couple of questions. How does the menopause affect women at work?
So the NHS and our trust has a workforce which is made up of around 75% of women. So we need to be mindful and supportive of women going through the menopause. Unfortunately, a recent statistic shows that 1 in 10 women who have worked while going through the menopause have left a job because of their symptoms. So, yes, the menopause definitely does affect women at work. But by learning about the menopause and how we can make sure our affected staff, friends, family members are adequately supported, we can take some small steps to reverse that statistic. So the trust has signed up to the Menopause Workplace Pledge, led by Wellbeing of Women in July. And by signing that pledge, we recognise that the menopause can be an issue in the workplace and women need support. We pledge that we'll talk openly, positively and respectively about the menopause by promoting the information, events, podcasts and discussions with staff. We will actively support and inform our employees affected by the menopause, both through our menopause support group, but also by encouraging an open dialogue about menopause in the workplace.
And as you say, as an NHS trust, we've got lots and lots of women who work for us, and so do other workplaces. And how can workplaces, apart from signing a pledge to say we'll talk about it more, how can we actually put that in place to have those conversations?
So we have a menopause support group, and we really want to ensure that this group is beneficial to our employees who are in need of that support. So we'll be holding 2 menopause support drop-in sessions. One is on the 17th of October, and that's going to be in the Oak Restaurant between 9:30 and 11:30 on the Mount Vernon site. And the second one is going to be on the 24th of October in the Choices Restaurant, again, between 9:30 and 11:30. We're also going to be holding a stand-in Choices Restaurant on the 18th of October during the lunch period. And we encourage anyone who wants to just drop by, have a chat, pick up some information to do that. But also, we encourage our staff to talk to their managers if they feel comfortable in doing so. You can talk to myself or Danny, our EDI lead, if you'd prefer to speak in confidence. Or you can go straight to your doctor for advice if you think you're experiencing any menopause or perimenopause symptoms. And also, there are many apps out there that can support our staff.
So remember, you're not alone if you're going through perimenopause or the menopause, and it's worth finding out as much as you can. If you're a member of staff here, we've got a menopause support group, as Elaine says. You can find out all the details of how to join that. If you want to go along to any events, the details are on our staff intranet on the Wellbeing Hub, and look out for all the events that Elaine's talked about in our staff newsletter. Thank you for joining me today, both of you.
Thank you so much.
So, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Please do join in the conversation about this episode, tag us in social media and send us any other comments and let us know your thoughts, and we'll see you next time.